Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
John McClain with us.
Timeless classic.
You can join him at 615-737-1045. Our number, he's been covering the NFL since the 70s, and he's nice enough to join us now on the show. He joins us twice a week here on the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. John, for those unfamiliar with your filmography, would you mind catching us up on all the movies you've been in and appeared in?
Oh, let's see.
Do we have that much time?
The Rookie, The Longest Yard, Remake, Invincible, Secretariat, Cook County, Make It Rain, The Game Plan, and Spring Breakers. Man. I think that's all.
Cook County was your, I mean, that was a legit
That was your
role.
Star tour.
With yeah. Anson Mount.
Picked up the child.
Yep, that was a lot of fun. Spring Breakers was a lot of fun. Harmony Korine right there from Nashville directed it. Got a lot of good pub on RottenTomatoes.com from critics around the country. James Franco starred along with Harmony's wife and Ashley Benson and Vanessa Hutchins and Selena Gomez and moi.
The star of the show right there.
The judge.
Best movie set to be on. Best experience overall.
Well, that one, considering I spent 9 hours in a courtroom with yeah. three girls, with the three bikini-clad ladies.
That's why I was thinking of that.
In a scene in which I sentenced them to jail with because they couldn't make bail.
Guilty!
But I also had a lot of fun on The Longest Yard set because it was just, you know, we were there for a few hours with Adam Sandler, and he couldn't have been better to us. He was a lot of fun. Got to spend time with Dwayne Johnson on The Game Plan. Oh, I forgot. On Secretariat, I had a scene with Diane Lane and John Malkovich, and I had two lines in which I said stuff to her, and they got cut. And both times when I was yelling at her, Malkovich grabbed her to pull her away. And I think I've told this story before. They shot a picture with about five of us together, including the director, Diane Lane. I was next to Diane Lane. She's very short. It doesn't come out that way on movies because they get, you know, proportionate people. And so the Chronicle, I had our online guy crop out everybody else. It looked like me and Diane were just hanging out together on the set of Secretariat in Lexington, Kentucky. And the one I regret is I had a part in the remake of Footloose, and Lorraine Mayfield, one of the top casting directors in the country, who's from Nashville, she's the one that got me the part. Craig Brewer was the director, and I had filmed a scene with my part as a judge in a courtroom in Houston with an attorney, and the judge told me he would do the scene, I had a gavel, his role, I had everything. And we shot it, and Craig Brewer told Ray that I did such a good job, he's going to give me a bigger part in a scene with Dennis Quaid. And the problem was I had to be in Atlanta at 6 a.m. on a Monday morning to get ready to film, and I was in Washington at a Texans-Redskins game. It was a 4 o'clock, and there was no way I could get there, and they couldn't change it. But I had envisioned this because Dennis Quaid was the star of The Rookie. I was going to put a headline on our website and write a story like co-stars of The Rookie or something like McClain, Quaid reunited in a Footloose remake after co-starring in The Rookie. But I couldn't make it. And probably the neatest thing I've ever had happen in the movies was when Cook County came out. It was a theater here that had 400 people sold it out. Media came and the director put up in the big marquee starring John McClane and underneath and Anson Mount. And so all my friends wanted me to come out and stand under the marquee while they took pictures of my name on there. And that was a lot of fun.
I was there.
Anson,
I was in
Anson
Houston.
Didn't mind for one time to be the under undercard.
I don't remember if that was in the spring, but I was down there for OTAs or minicamp or something, and I saw that marquee and I watched the movie there.
I saw it in Nashville at the premiere here in Nashville in town.
We won awards in Nashville, South by Southwest, and Austin. It was
a good movie.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, very deep.
Let me ask you guys something about the Titans throwback jersey. Do they ever wear any Oiler jerseys?
No.
I remember one time they wore the Columbia blue in a preseason game.
Yeah, way back.
The last time they wore that was the
Hall of Fame game.
The anniversary of it was the 15-year anniversary with the Oilers throwbacks. The 59-0 game. They were wearing Oilers throwbacks against the Patriots.
Yeah,
the AFL. It was the AFL season.
That was 09.
All the throwbacks of the Titans now are just Titans throwbacks.
Well, moving into the new uniforms, I can't imagine they're going to wear throwbacks anytime soon while they're trying to brand these new ones.
John, someone reminds us, you were also in the Water Boy.
No, I'm not in the Water Boy. I wish I was, but I wasn't.
Oh, maybe not.
Yeah. I think maybe not or definitely not?
Well, no, I'm saying he just could have left it out. He's got an extensive IMDb page. He couldn't get to all the films he's been
with.
IMDb page, which I've never had anything to do with it, and I don't know who's put things, is not complete because it doesn't have all 8 movies on there.
Which movie gives you the best check still to this day?
The Longest Yard remake.
In fact,
I'm glad you brought that up. I've never received a check for Spring Breakers. They owe me a lot of money.
They sure do.
I need to look up on the back of my SAG card. It says where to call if you're, getting screwed. I got to call them.
Can you make that call on the air for us? That would be great.
I wish.
John, I assume that the Sandler movies are fun to be on set. Was that fun with The Longest Yard?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, even though our scene with Chris Berman was before us. I was in a scene I put together with media people that would help promote it. It was Adam Schefter, the late Brian Burwell, Jay Glazer, Peter King, Sam Farmer, Larry Wiseman, who was working at USA Today. And now I Google that sometimes, and I look at it, and I think, man, some of them had dark hair. I was about 100 pounds ago, and how different most of us look. Schefter looks exactly the same because he works out every day. And it was so much fun being there and hanging out. And I'll tell you all an interesting story. We spent a lot of time on the set because they extended Chris Berman's part doing a play-by-play. So we're waiting around. And it was the new movie sets are packed. They have food. They have anything you want. Somebody's job is just walk around holding a big tray like a waiter in a restaurant with food on it. And so I told the producer, I said, man, oh, man, you got everything in here but good-looking women in tight, short skirts. I just threw that out there. About an hour later, everybody looks over at the entrance. Here come these 4 women, beautiful women in short, tight skirts. And we're all watching them. They go over to the producer, and he nods over to me. And they come over to me, and I'm trying to suck my stomach in like this. And they said, Mr. McLean, Mr. Garapita has said, if you need anything, to let us know. And I was like, thank you. So they hung around a while and left.
John McLean is with us. 615-737-1045, our number. We've gone through the IMDb page with John here, Chad, and coming up, straight football discussion. The Steve McNair look back 9 years after his murder, the double murder, the murder and suicide, murder-suicide over on 2nd Avenue. We look back on his life and career tomorrow on Titans Radio 104.5 The Zone. It will air throughout the day tomorrow on July 4th.
I know Rhett Bryan and Brad Willis have been working hard on this. It's going to be really, really cool. I would encourage people to give it a listen while you're out and about tomorrow on your 4th of July holiday.
Jeff Fisher will be on this special. He called yesterday to be a part of it. So it's going to be very good. John, how did you find out that McNair had been killed?
First of all, I think that's a great thing you guys are doing. I'll certainly be tweeting it and retweeting it several times. It's interesting because I went this past weekend to Waco, my hometown, for my 35th consecutive softball reunion that I started with members of the media in 1983. And one day, one of my best friends, who also works at the Chronicle, Lester Zed, He scored a run, and he tripped, and he fell, and he broke both wrists and his hip. And his face hit the wall, which is now padded at the Baylor women's softball field. So we had to get him to the emergency room. I was in the emergency room with him, and I get a call from George Plaster. He said, "You hear about McNair?" And I said, "No." He said, "He's dead." And I thought, wow, Bob McNair had a heart attack? I thought Bob McNair, the Texans owner. And then he goes, "No, Steve McNair." He said, "It hasn't come out. It's about to come out." I said, wow. And I immediately thought I had Steve lined up for one of the Charles Davis dinners, which would have been about 3 weeks later, and with Jeff Fisher and other coaches. And Steve had done it once before and told me he had so much fun he would do it any time. So he was coming. That's the first thing I thought about when I found out that, yes, he was dead. Is what are we going to do for the Charles Davis dinner? And Eddie George subbed with Frank Whitecheck, and it turned out to be kind of testimonial to Steve.
Yep.
So that's how I found out that Steve McNair was dead.
I was in Virginia Beach and visiting family there, and I remember we were sitting at a club right there on the oceanfront, and it was all over the news when we walked in. I had no idea until then. It was an eerie feeling because I immediately called and tried to, you know, get a flight back here for news coverage on Titans Radio and the website at the time. How about you guys?
I was across the river for the fireworks, probably about 500 yards from where it happened. So once the news report started coming out, I immediately went into work mode, and I was right there with the cops.
Well,
the fireworks were that night. We got there really early.
There's always a concert and things.
Yeah, there were concerts, and we got there.
I was just thinking it was way earlier in the day.
Oh, yeah, no, we got there. We got there early, and we're tailgating and getting ready for the concert that night. And then the news came down, so I walked across the river and just called in reports right there from next to the crime scene. I remember Don Aaron coming out with the Metro Police probably every 20, 30 minutes to give an update on what was going on to all the assembled media there. A wild day.
I was in Santa Barbara, California, standing in a pool with my college gang. And Teresa and all of our spouses and significant others, and probably about four beers into my day. And I didn't take a computer on that trip. And I got out of the pool and talked to Bristol and borrowed a computer, went into my room, wrote one kind of thorough remembrance, did one big hit for ESPN News that replayed most of the day, and then flew back Monday morning and got to work.
Reed?
I was working with Titans Radio and doing mornings on WKDF at the time, and I was getting set to go down to the fireworks downtown.
Because we carried that live at the time.
Yeah, I was scheduled to host the events that evening, and I was going home to get some rest before that, and as I was driving past where it happened, I saw the tape, got a phone call when I was a couple blocks away and turned around and went back. I was the first media person on the scene there. Just me and crime scene and a cop at the time.
So eerie at the time, too. Well, anyway, I'm looking forward to the McNair look back. That's tomorrow right here on 104.5 The Zone. Big career moments, life moments, moving to Tennessee from Houston, different things. And Jeff Fisher will be a big part of it. All three shows will be a big part of it right here on 104.5 The Zone. John, I'm going to get your take on T.O. electing to have his enshrinement speech at UTC, his college. It's going to take place on August the 4th, which is the same day as the enshrinement in Canton on that Saturday. And he's doing it at 3:17 p.m. What's the significance of that time? Do you know?
No idea, but at least it's not going to interfere with the inductions, which will be televised nationally. And I hate that he's going to get publicity, but you know, media will be there. I'm sure ESPN will be there. And then his absence will get a lot of attention on Hall of Fame weekend. And I'm sure there's a lot of Hall of Famers who are going to rip him up because they don't have to be, they don't have to work for teams of the league. And I know ones I've talked to, and I've been around a lot lately because of the Robert Brazil induction and Rose, and they don't have nice things to say about him thumbing his nose at him. And that's exactly what he did. But it's his prerogative, do whatever he wants. going back to school. I think that's great. That's where anybody heard about him. People heard about him for the first time. First time I heard about him was Mike Olivak was the general manager, or at that point, I think, I can't remember who was general manager, if it was him or Floyd, but he told me, he said that there's a big receiver that I saw in practice yesterday from Chattanooga that impressed me. I'm going to have to go watch more of him. And I said, what's his name? He told me I'd never heard of him. So I think someday he's going to look back on that, and he's going to regret not being there because he's depriving his family, his friends, his fans, everybody of seeing what would be his greatest moment in sports.
So he's doing this August 4th. It's an event in, at Chattanooga's McKenzie Arena. It's free and open to the public that day. How will the hall handle that? Will they actually have his bust on display on stage? Or I wonder how they go about doing that.
Well, he'll have his bust. He'll be mentioned when they mention all of the Hall of Famers. But when you come up for your acceptance speech, you know, that's when your bust is displayed.
Right.
So I don't know if they'll just put it in the hall. If they'll keep it on the stage with the others. Obviously, it'll not be moved up.
Will they send
it's
it
not
to,
like they'll ignore him.
Will they send it to Chattanooga?
I don't think so. He may have a replica done, but that thing will be in the Hall of Fame, and you don't know if he'll ever. Maybe he'll sneak in there and disguise some winner when he thinks nobody's there and go see. Check it out.
John, I have to say I hate the decision by T.O., but I have a little bit more respect for it now that he's not really cashing in on this. I was fully expecting him to host some sort of Vegas party, $1,000 ahead, $500 ahead, to do something to cash in on it. Yeah, televise something, to take some more of the gusto away from the Hall of Fame, but looks like he's just having a free event at his college, which surprises me.
I agree with you, Chad. I thought that's what he was going to do, be down on a beach in Mexico with some beer sponsoring him. But now that he's at his college, good for him. But I do think he's going to look back and regret it. And the neatest thing is not the induction that's televised nationally. It's not being introduced at halftime of the game in prime time. It's when you get your gold jacket at the Enshrinees dinner in the Canton Civic Center, and you walk from one end with your presenter up a ramp, and you're being high-fived by Hall of Famers in gold jackets, and you're shaking hands with them, and they're cheering for you, and the lights are flashing, and the music is blaring, and your picture's on the giant screens on both ends, and you walk up, and your family's shooting videos and pictures, and your fans and friends are screaming and shooting that moment, and then you go up, and whoever would have been his presenter puts on his gold jacket, and you walk around the stage with your hands in the air acknowledging everybody. That is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that he will never have.
Let's go to Johnny on line one for John McClain. Hey, Johnny.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
John, I got a quick question about the Raiders and Khalil Mack. Are they going to get a deal reached? And I'll hang up and listen.
Nobody knows. Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack and Jadeveon Clowney, I think their agents have been waiting on each other. The Texans, I doubt seriously, are going to sign Clowney to an extension since he did not participate in the offseason program because of a sore knee that had a scope in January. I kind of think he was protecting himself, but he was there every day. And so it depends on if Mack or Donald's agent blinks first. You know, if they don't sign the extension, their contract will expire. They'll put the franchise tag on them next year if they cannot reach an agreement. Usually, the longer you wait, the more money it costs. Donald was defensive player this year. What if he's a defensive player next season? Then the price of doing business is going to be even more.
Yep.
And I kind of feel like Donald will be the first to sign, but I don't know if it will be before the season.
Mack is, 27 years old, and he's entering the final year of his rookie contract where he's going to make a base of around $14 million. It's a little bit less than that, which seems fair just looking at it on paper, but then you consider he's, three consecutive seasons of double-digit sacks.
Yeah, this is the deal right here.
He's been very dominant, very dominant.
He must want a lot of money because those are not cheap organizations. They don't traditionally have contract issues. I know they're both trying to get more guaranteed money than Von Miller, which means they'd have to get, I think, about 70 million guaranteed. Plus, they want to be the first non-quarterback to make $20 million a year or more. And so far, those teams, at least that we know of, they may have agreed to 20 and they want 23. We don't know, but they must want a lot to be unsigned at this point.
Well,
and, I'm sorry to not have signed an extension at this point.
And Mac, and rightfully so, should be comparing himself to Von Miller, because over the last three seasons, he has 36 and a half sacks. Speaking of Khalil Mack, Von Miller has 34 and a half over the last three seasons. So Mack has two more sacks than Miller, and Miller is playing on a six-year contract that's worth about $113 million. So
timing is everything. Miller won a Super Bowl and played great. Mack has yet to do that.
John, happy 4th to you. Enjoy tomorrow.
Same to you guys. I look forward to listening to the special on Steve McNair. Hope you guys have a great day, and I'll talk to you Friday.
Thanks, John. Look forward to it. John McClain with us twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, right here on the Midday 180.